that happens in life can happen in a show. You can make them laugh, you can make them cry. Anything, anything can go.
Welcome to your weekend. This is Weekend Showcase, your North State Arts Magazine. I'm Tom Kinney. Today we talk with a professor from the art department at CSU Chico about his class, which teaches students to create public murals. His students have painted murals on walls in Chico, Las Molinas, Corning, and other locations in the North State. We'll also talk with one of his students who helped create the Cesar Chavez mural in Chico's City Hall. And on today's program, we'll take you to Riverfront Playhouse in Reading to hear from the director and two cast members from 12 Angry Men, the tense drama about jurors deliberating as a young man's life hangs in the balance. That's coming up over the next half hour here on Weekend Showcase. Stay tuned. First, here's Brian Maul with the North State Arts Calendar.
In Reading, Axiom Repertory Theater ends its run of Next to Normal. This Tony-winning musical is on stage at Reading's Old City Hall tonight and tomorrow night at 7:30, with the final performance Sunday at 2. This year, celebrate 4th of July with the Reading Freedom Festival. Gather on the lawn of Reading's Civic Auditorium to enjoy the largest fireworks display in Northern California. Bring a lawn chair or blanket. Seating begins at 7 o'clock when Chris McCandless and the Shasta Symphonic Band take the stage to present a medley of patriotic music. The fireworks show begins at 10 o'clock. The Orland Arts Center hosts the exhibit The American West, A Way of Life. Tracy Libby displays her Western-themed fine art photographs. Gallery hours 1 to 6, Tuesday through Sunday. In Chico's downtown plaza tonight, the band Off the Record invites you to take a musical journey back to the 80s. The retro dance party begins at 7 o'clock. At Chico's Red Tavern, today and tomorrow are your final chances to see the art show North State Realities and Fantasies, paintings by Dolores Mitchell depicting many Chico area locations. The Red Tavern is located at 1250 The Esplanade. At Chico's MALCA, the Museum of Northern California Art, the exhibit titled Persistence, works by 60 Northern California women artists. Museum hours, 11 a.m. to 5 p.m., Thursday through Sunday. That's the calendar for this week. Born on this date, Bernard Herrmann, generally considered the greatest film composer of all time. I feel that music on the screen, Herrmann remarked, can seek out and intensify the inner thoughts of the characters. It is the communicating link between the screen and the audience, reaching out and enveloping all into one single experience.
Dolores Mitchell. Today I'm speaking with two people about new murals in Chico and also surrounding communities. I'm going to be talking to Jay Powles, professor of a public art murals class at California State University Chico, as well as Will Mobley, a instigating force in the Cesar Chavez mural now in City Hall in Chico. Jay, tell us about your class.
The public art mural class was designed in order to try and help students understand professional aspects of art making. We're interested very much in the art department of trying to give students an opportunity to understand what their degree will be able to do for them. Working for members of the communities to make public art is something that we think could be very valuable.
Chico has quite a tradition for mural art.
Yes. There's the big John Pugh mural right there on the new building, right across from Celestino's Pizza. We see that every day when we go into the art department. There's no reason why we can't aspire to do things like that or even bigger and better. That's one of the things that made me think, how can we bring something new to our students that's going to give them an opportunity to feel accomplished, but also allow them to put something into the community that's going to stay there even after they graduate? As you pointed out, there are a lot of murals in and around Chico, and I feel like that if our art students can be part of that, their time in Chico will be more than just the degree they get. It'll also be that thing that they get to leave behind, that whenever they come back through town, they're like, hey, Mom, Dad, that's my mural.
Give us a rundown as to where listeners can see some of these murals.
We've got a mural on campus in the niche of the new building that's right next to the Pugh mural. We've got a mural at Oroville Middle School that students did. We've got a mural in the Los Molinos Library, the children's section, which is really cute. We've got a really large mural in the Corning Library. We painted a bank of lockers in the art department. We've done quite a work on a couple of other murals that are yet to come to pass. For example, we spent quite a bit of time designing two murals for T-Bar Infusion Cafe that's building two new stores, one in Sacramento and one in San Francisco. The owner of that business came to us and asked us if we could be the design team and the paint team when the time comes to try and bring new branding imagery into the store.
I'm going to turn now to Will, who has participated in making one of these murals happen.
We did a mural of Cesar Chavez. It's hanging in City Hall right now. It was a new experience for me as someone who really wants to be a muralist, someone who wants to get my work out there large scale. I think it was important for the community to look at what the students can really bring out, and it can really show what people are capable of.
Take listeners to the process of developing this specific mural, which is now in City Hall in Chico.
This was actually a really last-second mural. We had a few weeks to do it. There was a few setbacks in terms of our timeline. We had to have it done before Cesar Chavez Day, which was a Saturday. We ended up not getting the full design until that Friday morning right before, and then we just had the go-ahead. 13 hours later, we had a full mural. We had a few concepts that we worked out. I had a great team. Myself and two other people that came together last second and just did some phenomenal work.
Have you had any feedback on this mural?
I've had a lot of great feedback. Publicity is always nice. I think the kind words from my instructors and my fellow students are really what drive me and kind of keep me going with it. Hanging it up in City Hall, we had some of the local bureaucrats telling us what was great about it, what wasn't great about it, although they said very few things weren't great about it. We got a lot of positive feedback.
Jay, you were also saying students learned a great deal besides painting in this process.
The Cesar Chavez mural is a great example. The class was basically set up to try and teach students how to collaborate, how to work with partners who are not artists and don't have the same vision that artists do, so that they learn revision of the work. Different processes involved in applying murals of different sizes and on different surfaces, and for different weather conditions, thinking about longevity and those kinds of things. We would make a design, and then we'd give the design to the quote-unquote client. They would ratify that design. They'd come back with some tips or suggestions or some preferences. We would have to interpret what they wanted and then redesign. The Cesar Chavez mural that Will, Chris, and Shannon painted is a great example. We had a couple of weeks when we first found out about it. Getting word back from the person that we were working with was a very slow process in many instances. The final ratification of the design didn't come through until Friday morning, and they wanted the mural in 24 hours. As I understand it, they had the design for a few days before they got back to us, so it took them a while to sort of machinate and figure out whether or not they wanted this design. They came back to us with, like, this is great, go ahead and do it. We were left scratching our heads a little bit, thinking, okay, so no sleep tonight. But that's part of the process, not just painting the mural. It's learning how to communicate. It's learning when to say no, which is really challenging in and of itself because we want to do everything we can. And learning how to collaborate, learning how to be team members and not make it just about me or I, but about the group.
I'd like to hear from Will how this goes along with what might be a stereotypical view of an artist, someone who is a loner, who just does their own thing.
As an artist, I do want to have my own interpretation viewed by people, but when you're working large scale in the public eye, especially with murals, you have to really be considerate of what is this going to mean to everyone else? What is this person going to see? Is this going to be offensive? Is this going to get my message across? Is there going to be multiple layers to this? You have to really consider the business owner or just the owner of the building, how this is going to play a part in their business or just the way that the public views them. And with this large scale, it's easier to work with a team. It makes it considerably faster. You kind of lose a little bit more of your own touch on it, and it becomes more of a collaboration, which can also lose the original message.
Do you see this as affecting your future as an artist?
I've only ever worked with a perfectly smooth surface before, and working with a cinder block wall that has porous surface and all these different angles, it really teaches you that you have to think dynamically on the spot. You might have this perfect idea of where something goes, and you walk up to the wall, and you realize there's no way you can do it the way that you originally wanted to. Besides working with a team on this, my biggest learning experience was putting paint on something's a lot more complicated than it sounds. Working on some of the more public murals, I've had people come up and say, hey, we want this done. Or like yesterday we were finishing up a mural downtown and someone came up and he's like, you know, we have a business 2 blocks away and I would love to have you guys come and look at it. We've actually had a few of those just on that one mural.
Jay, you were saying that there were certain difficulties with financing the projects.
One of our concerns was if students were going to go and work, for example, Red Bluff is not that far away. But if you're going to be driving up there 4 or 5 or 6 times and you're a student, gas is going to become a bit of an issue. We wanted to try and find a way to be able to help offset the cost of travel for students. There were some great partners in the community and on campus who helped us solve these problems. This is the first time CSU Chico's ever had a mural class. It's come with some challenges, some teething pains as we try and figure it out. I've learned a lot about how to do it. The partners that we had who showed up to help us out were all across campus. There are lots of different people on campus who had good ideas. Some of them we were able to follow up on, and some of them would be good for next time around. At this time in the country, there isn't a sense very much that people want to help each other. It seems more divisive than anything else. So it was nice to see the sense of people coming together, pulling together to try and help for a common cause. And at the center of that common cause was art.
Well, there seems to be a public service element in this class.
Yes, it's a 3-unit course, and 1 unit was dedicated to public service. One example was, this was Will and several other students, and I went up to the high school in Los Molinos, and we met with students there and talked with students from FFA, Future Farmers of America, as we were preparing for a mural in Los Molinos. And we had a great conversation with them about, we even had them do some art. We brought some paper and some coloring pencils, and we made some art with them. And then we met with some of the community members to talk a little bit about what art could mean for the community. On a number of instances, we've worked with school students in different parts of our North State area. One, with the idea of bringing them art, because I think there isn't enough art in our schools. It's something that we need more of, in my opinion. Shouldn't be surprising as an artist myself. But also just for the CSU Chico students to get a chance to communicate with younger Californians, I think is really important. And there are a number of students in the mural class who are art education double majors. And so they're already thinking about this stuff. And it was really heartening for me, particularly in Los Molinos, to watch Will, Martin Townsend, Marie Fox in particular, be able to communicate with younger students at the tables, talking to them, sitting down, building relationships, having laughs together. And then when the students left and the older people came into the classroom, they were able to change their game and immediately talk turkey with the older people. Seeing the students be able to go back and forth between those two demographics was really inspiring to me. And I was, as we would say in New Zealand, chuffed, which means thrilled.
Will, what was your experience like working with those students?
I was impressed. One of the biggest things I learned from this class, and I guess knowing now that one of the units is about the public side of it, was that everyone who heard about our class wanted to be involved in it. We didn't have anyone who was opposed to it. It was all just go, go, go. Especially when we went to the students. They were the most excited out of all, probably because they were young and like, hey, we get to draw all day. But I think once they really got the idea that like, no, this is going to be, you know, permanent. Like, we want to make something that you all want to look at when you're older, younger, your kids, you know, way down the line can look at this. I think it was just kind of inspirational in a way to see this younger generation being just as excited about this as I am now.
Jay, I know what your answer is going to be, but I'll ask it anyway. Do you think it's important that art appears in public places?
No. I'm kidding. Yes, yes. I heard someone say many years ago once that the best way to understand a culture is through their art. And I think that's true. I feel very much like when we look at the Greek history or Roman history or the ancient Egyptians or Assyrians or whomever, we look at their art as a way to understand what their culture was about. And I think that's something that we lose sight of in our got to get there now, got to do it first kind of culture. One of the things we lose is the time it takes to just stand still and look at something, to immerse yourself in something. And that's what art asks of us, the difference between graphic art and fine art, not to create divisions necessarily, is that graphic art is about trying to get you the image and the message immediately. Fine art is about asking you to slow down for a minute, look and think. We try and find a balance between those two things when we make murals, something that can be appreciated by the community without having to think, but also something that if you stop and look at it, you can find layers of information in there that help people in the community to understand better who they are as a shared community. Not just who they are as an individual, but who their neighbors are. And art has the power to do that. And so I believe that it's very important that we have as much art as possible in our world, and it can't all be in the white cube of the gallery. So putting it on the street's a really good idea.
Well, thank you both for giving us insight into these new murals on the third floor of Chico City Hall in Los Molinos and in Corning and Oroville.
Let's join our Reading correspondent, Kelly. He's at one of Reading's leading theaters to find out about the current production.
I'm Kelly Frost. I'm at the Riverfront Playhouse, and I'm talking with the director of 12 Angry Men.
I'm John Welsh.
Can you give me a synopsis of the play?
Sure. The play actually takes place in the 50s. It was originally done in 1954 on television as a television drama in one of the anthology series. It centers around a 19-year-old youth who has stabbed his father, and he's standing trial. The story takes place entirely in the jury deliberation room. You've got your 12 jurors, and you have a guard. And what starts off as a cut-and-dried case of murder, son killing father, that's it, let's go home. One juror says, wait a minute. It just doesn't seem right to me that we're going to send a young man off to die without at least talking about it a little bit. The story is not so much about trying to prove the boy's innocence as it is about listening to the reasonable doubt, listening to those rational arguments that crop up and say, well, what if? Maybe it didn't happen that way. Maybe his lawyer didn't really present everything that he could have presented. As the play goes on, and it's a very short play, it's only about an hour and a half, we see each of the jurors in their own mind. They have to decide for themselves, well, was I speaking out of prejudice? Or is there, in fact, some basis of truth in what this man says about reasonable doubt?
When I heard you say the play is about this man who murdered his father, I almost said, don't you mean allegedly murdered his father?
Yeah, very good. That's very good. Allegedly murdered. You know, what's interesting about the play, and I really love the fact that the ethnicity of this boy is never mentioned whatsoever. We know we're set in New York City. We know it's hot. It's the middle of the summer. But we don't know if the boy is, say, either Puerto Rican, he's Mexican, African-American. We don't know the nationality. And I think that was done on purpose. And it's one of the things that I liked about staging this play right now. We have so many new biases and prejudices surrounding us that it could be about any one of our prejudices toward the gay, towards the anti-abortionists, towards liberals, conservatives, old, young. And, you know, it's, can we listen to them? Can we meet these people and listen to them and decide honestly their worth or their value and not just rely on a built-in prejudice?
The play takes place in the 50s. How do you think it would be different if it was a modern play?
I think today there are so many firmly held opinions. I think there would be more disputes and confrontations between and among the jurors. I think we'd see even more antagonism and more of the anger in a setting like this, currently contemporary.
During this play, we're not going to see any part of the trial. This is all just completely the deliberations. What do you think the audience is going to go through with this?
Well, we were very fortunate. Last night was our preview night, and we had one of the largest audiences ever for a preview night here. And one of the comments a friend of mine on Facebook wrote was, you could see the workings in the minds of each one of these jurors as they deliberated. And I thought, oh, yes, wonderful. That's what I want to see.
We're sitting on the stage right now. This set is very simple. I mean, it's just a long table with some pencils and some scratch paper. And the ashtrays are interesting. I don't think you would see that today.
No.
And 12 chairs. That's your whole set.
That's it. I wanted it stark. I wanted all of the attention right on the 12 people at this table. And I had a brainstorm, I thought. I'm using fluorescent lighting above the table. It gives a glow to the table and to the actors that I just love. It just concentrates all of the action right on the table. We've been rehearsing 6-7 weeks, and to be able to see the reactions of the jurors and the actors one to another as they get comfortable and as they feel good inside their skin, as they're confident in the lines, then they start those little personality traits that a person would have with one another. And it's fun. It's fun.
It sounds like it's going to be a lot of fun.
Oh, thank you, Kelly. Thank you for supporting us like you do.
Tell me your name and then tell me your character's name.
All right. I am Don Tamblyn, and I play juror number 3.
Oh, you don't even have a name.
I created a name for my character, but we don't use the names in the show.
Well, tell me a little bit about your character, this juror. What goes through his mind? It sounds like, at least from the beginning, most of the jurors are going to convict this guy. So tell me about the thought process that your character has.
Well, my particular character is a working class man, and he sees things very black and white. There are no gray areas to him. It's either right or wrong, good or bad. In this case, he's convinced that this kid that was on trial is guilty.
We never see the accused person. For you as an actor, did you have to just make up this accused person in your head too?
Yeah, as you said, we don't do the courtroom scenes. This is just the jury deliberation. So in our minds, we've already had to sit through the trial, which went on for 6 days, according to the script, and listen to all the testimony and decide what we're going to do now. Each individual actor has probably created in his own mind a little scenario of what that court trial was like.
Tell me about being in a play like this where there's 12 of you in a room here at this table. How does that help build relationships? Do you feel like, you know, almost like a family? Or
it's not a family feeling. It's more like a clubhouse feeling.
Okay.
A bunch of guys hanging out together and stuff like that. We get along together as actors. We joke around and all that. But as our characters, we're all very confrontational with each other most of the time. So we have to build that into our relationships. Once we're on stage in this little box that we set up for ourselves, it's very stark. It's just a table, black walls, and us. And we are here the entire show. Nobody leaves this room until the show is over. We are stuck here the entire time of the run of the play. And that's unusual. Most plays, you make entrances and exits. Mm-hmm. This play, once we come on, we're here.
My name's Charlie Finkel, and I play juror number 4. My character is sort of the fellow that the other jurors look to for calm and logic I wear a fancy suit, and it looks like I'm probably the wealthiest of all of them, and I feel at least that I may be smarter than the rest of them. So I'm there to analyze the facts, and I ask everybody to be reasonable and don't be hasty. One line is, it's always wise to bear in mind what has happened in countries where people aren't allowed to disagree, but we are. So let's stick to the subject. Things like that. He's bringing the rest of the jurors together. And he really is one of the last holdouts. The play, obviously, is about the deliberations of a murder trial. And we start out, 11 vote guilty, one votes not guilty, juror number 8. And then the rest of the play is everybody analyzing the facts. And that's one of the things that I do, is I kind of point everybody in the direction to analyze the facts. If we're going to discuss this case, let's discuss the facts. It's interesting for me in particular, because in my professional life, I was a lawyer. Tried many cases to juries, and I've always been fascinated at how we're doing this and saying this, and then when the jury comes back, they hear other things. You know, it's like they heard a different trial. So it's fascinating for me to sit in on this jury deliberations. Basically, everybody except one has preconceived notions at the beginning, and not only about the guilt of the boy, but about stereotypes of other people and facts. As an audience, you can watch and see how you deal with the problem and ferret out all the differences of opinions and then ultimately come to a common understanding.
If this were an actual trial and you were a juror yourself, do you think you would vote to convict this person?
Well, you know, that's that's a little hard to say, because if it were an actual trial, I would probably hear more of the facts. Now, based upon the facts that we're dealing with as jurors, at the very end, and you have to come and watch the play to see what happens, but at the very end, I hear something that really changes my mind. And really, we're talking about reasonable doubt. You know, it's not whether he's innocent or guilty. It's whether he's not guilty by reason of reasonable doubt. Based upon what I hear in this case, ultimately, I think I would say, well, there is reasonable doubt, and that's what happens.
The play 12 Angry Men is currently at Riverfront Playhouse in Reading. It plays tonight and tomorrow night at 7:30 and Sunday at 2, and then ends its run next weekend, July 6th and 7th. And that's Weekend Showcase for this week. We'll be back next Friday at 3 o'clock. If you ever miss this program at its regular broadcast time, you can hear it online anytime after 3:30 Friday at mynspr.org. As always, we encourage you to enjoy the arts in the North State. For Weekend Showcase, I'm Tom Kinney. Weekend Showcase is a production of North State Public Radio.